Hello and welcome to the College Football Experience Podcast. My name is David Cable. I am joined by Kent Brown. Kent, let's kick off things we learned last week. It was conference championship week. It was an exciting weekend. But let's start with the things we learned, and we'll start with Alabama and what we know to do with Nick Saban.
Yeah, you just can't doubt Nick Saban as an underdog. I did it. I went Georgia. I very well might go Georgia again for the title game. The difference will be if they play, Alabama might be the favorite in that one. And look, this starts to be a bigger issue of can Kirby Smart and his staff beat Nick Saban? He's now 0-4 against Nick Saban, and that includes two SEC championship games, both of which he was up double digits. He was up 10-0 in this game. And then, of course, the national title game, and then a regular season game last season with COVID when Nick Saban technically didn't coach and Sark was the interim coach. But it becomes a little bit damning for this Georgia program that they can't get over the Alabama hump, because if they're going to be the best team in the country, they have to eventually beat Alabama. And for Nick Saban, as he said, the rat poison that the media gave him was quote-unquote yummy. Nick Saban knows how to play up his team. He's always telling his team that they're not good enough anyways. And then when everyone else is saying it all week, I know Nick Saban must love that. So it was a huge win for Alabama. I thought if they won, it would be a lower scoring, close game. The fact that Georgia had zero sacks in the entire game just shows you that their game plan was off. They didn't adjust. This Alabama offensive line is still vulnerable. We saw it in the LSU game, we saw it in the A&M game, and then we certainly saw it in the Auburn game a week before. And for Georgia to not get any consistent pass rush all game, that was a huge deficit for them. And they're going to have to play a lot better whenever they're in the playoffs if they play Alabama again. But again, the biggest thing I learned, you can't pick against Nick Saban when he's an underdog. Always, nope. Always take the points. That was the first time in 93 games that they were an underdog. And the last time they were a dog, they beat the Georgia Bulldogs years ago as well.
Yeah, man. When you look at him, you say, man, everybody left for the NFL. This is supposed to be the down year. You know, you can't bet against him then either. It's just, man, the guy just does not take kindly to being an underdog, whether it's in a season or in a game, and usually shows up. Let's talk about the most exciting game, I think, of championship weekend. It was also the first game of Saturday morning out here on the West Coast, and that was the Oklahoma State-Baylor game. Oklahoma State fighting to get into the playoff would have really made it a little bit more interesting if they had scored on that last play. But you have that Titans-Rams Super Bowl fault coming up just short of the goal line. This was just short of that pylon to score and win that game.
Yeah, it was an amazing ending, and it was one that had so many playoff implications, because had Oklahoma State won, there would have been a legit debate between is Oklahoma State in or is Cincinnati in.
Cincinnati,
and I probably would have leaned towards Oklahoma State with all of their quality wins, but they were without Jaylen Warren in this game. That was a huge loss. They're, you know, all-conference running back. And Spencer Sanders continues in big games to turn the ball over, specifically against Baylor. I think he now had 7 combined interceptions in the 2 games against Baylor this year. Baylor was unbelievable in the first half. You have a backup quarterback that comes in. He had 0 incompletions until like the last possession of the second quarter. But in the second half, Oklahoma State's defense with Jim Knowles, who was a Broyles finalist. Now, Knowles, as of last night, is officially taking the Ohio State job. That's going to happen after the bowl game. So he'll coach them most likely in the Fiesta Bowl. Ohio State will keep their full staff together until after the Rose Bowl. But they shut down Baylor the entire second half. Baylor had a really weird decision where they went for 4th-and-1 inside their own 35, up 21-6. That gave Oklahoma State a short field when they hadn't done much all game. They eventually scored. But David, here's something that's crazy about this game. Oklahoma State had 17 plays inside the Baylor 10, and they scored 7 points.
Yeah.
In those 17 plays.
Oklahoma State wasn't meant to win this game when they threw 4 picks in the first half or first 3 quarters, whatever they did. It felt like this is not a team that was destined to win this game. But Spencer Sanders brings them all the way back, and they do have that chance, and it would have made for a little bit more interesting discussion. But Instead, we get our first group of five team in the playoff by virtue of Cincinnati going undefeated, winning their conference championship. And that's exciting. They now get to get destroyed by Alabama. But, you know, I will say that Cincinnati secondary is good. It's going to be as good of a shot as they have is going to come from that defense. So we'll see how they end up. But let's finally, Kent, get back into the coaching carousel a little bit. It's getting crazier and crazier. Now another one of your favorite schools, your alma mater, is affected as they weirdly hire Cristobal without firing Manny Diaz until they lined up Cristobal. They don't have an AD, but they're reaching out to one. So it was kind of a weird way that they did it. Obviously, some people are a little bit mad about some of the funds that they've used to they've allocated towards this hire. But at the end of the day, big move for you, for Miami, to go get Cristobal and have that coach that in a down ACC, you know, could bring them back to life.
Exactly. That's the thing with Miami, is if they get the right coach in place, which I think Cristobal is, this is a type of team that could be pretty quickly the second best program in the ACC within a year. Clemson still was that team. I know they had a somewhat down season, but they're still the best program. Now, Miami is almost definitely, I don't know if it's quite official as of the recording of this podcast, they're going to get the Clemson athletic director. He's going to now be the highest paid athletic director in the United States, Dan Radakovich. Mario Cristobal, one of the highest paid coaches now at $8 million a year. And of course, Miami already made a declaration to him. And this was the one thing that I was told all fall when I talked to some people that were pretty tied in at Miami. They said, if they can make it known to Cristobal that they're going to put the resources into football the way he'll need, he'll leave Oregon to come to Miami. That's where he wants to be. And ultimately, Miami made him the promise that he'll have the highest paid coaching staff in the conference year by year. And that's a huge step up, because we've seen what Clemson has paid their assistants.
Yeah, Clemson was paying their guys full head coach money.
Yeah, Brent Venables, of course, left for Oklahoma. He was making, I think, like, you know, $3 million a year. Yeah. And he's gone. Tony Elliott makes a couple million a year. He very well might be in the Duke running. If not, he'll probably be back. But it's a huge home run for Miami. It's a big deal to get Mario Cristobal back. And it's also good to get somebody back that knows South Florida, knows the high schools, can walk into any school, including St. Thomas Aquinas, American Heritage, Miami Central, Miami Northwestern, the schools that Alabama and Georgia lately have been stealing kids away from Miami. Cristobal's now going to battle with those staffs. And that's the one thing he's known as. He's known as about as good as a head coach recruiter as there is in the country. And now he's in the most fertile recruiting land that there is in South Florida. It's a huge deal. Miami has a nice offense in place right now with Tyler Van Dyke back, with a bunch of freshman receivers, freshman running backs, the best offensive line they've had in years. Defensively, we'll have to see who he hires or what they go about doing. There's also a guy named Joe Brady that just got fired from the Carolina Panthers. He's a South Florida native. He's a South Florida native. I think he'd fit in very well coaching the offense. So we'll see. But it's an exciting time for Miami. And it was weird with Manny Diaz. I get it. But if you needed Cristobal to feel safe, you had to make sure you get him first. And Manny Diaz, it kind of sucks that him and his assistants were out there doing the recruiting, pretty much knowing they're most likely not coming back. But that's big business college football now. We've seen it with Lincoln Riley leaving and Brian Kelly leaving and, you know, Dan Mullen getting fired after winning, you know, 9-10 games for a few years. That's just college football now. And if you want the big hire, chances are you're going to have to do some dirty work leading up to it.
Yeah, you know who didn't feel bad for him was the Temple fan base. They're they're totally fine with what's going on with Manny Diaz.
Hey, that job's still open. That job's still open. So maybe he ends up back at Temple. I doubt it.
I seriously doubt that.
I think for him, I think for Manny Diaz, I think he becomes a defensive coordinator somewhere pretty quickly. He was a good DC. As a head coach, he seemed to get a bit in over his skis. And of course, the defense this year was the real issue. They led the nation in missed tackles from week one all the way until the final week. And that was his side of the ball. That's not acceptable. But I do think as a defensive coordinator, he can land somewhere. And if he just focuses on the defense, I think he'll do a good job in that regard.
Yeah, so this opens up another really pretty primo job from the last 20 years, and that is Oregon, a team that's made the playoff before, that has been in national championship games in the last 20 years. They obviously have Nike's backing and, you know, are basically the richest team on the West Coast. So that opens up a big job. It'll be interesting to see kind of what dominoes fall from that, but this just adds to the list. Technically, Miami was never open since they kind of hired a guy, then fired a guy, but you now have Miami, USC, Oklahoma, Florida, Notre Dame, Oregon, all of these massive, Washington, all of these massive schools that have these openings. So this really is the craziest coaching carousel year I think we've ever had. So exciting to see which dominoes fall next. Okay, let's jump into the college football playoff matchups. Quickly, we'll break these down a little bit more in depth. We'll talk a little bit of the politics of them and a little bit of what our expectations are, and then we'll get into the New Year's Six Bowls before we talk Heisman, and then after next week we'll do the early bowls, late bowls. You guys know our whole schedule. So college football playoff matchup, Alabama jumps to number one. They will face number four Cincinnati, the Cotton Bowl, December 31st. Bama, two touchdown favorites. Then you have number two Michigan after their drubbing of Iowa. The turnaround is complete for Michigan. They're in the playoff. They are a two seed. Unfortunately, they have to go up against what I still consider the best team in college football, and that's number three, Georgia, at the Orange Bowl, December 31st. Georgia, 7.5-point favorite here. Kent, do you think it makes sense where everybody is? I know they didn't want to pit Alabama and Georgia together. Do you think Alabama deserved that one seed, or do you think Michigan did?
I think Alabama, you have to give it to them, knowing the fact that they beat the number one team in Georgia. They also won a bunch of games along the way of significance. And when you just look at the overall talent of the teams, the fact that Alabama seemingly is just, you know, they have Will Anderson, who in my opinion is the best defensive player in the country, and then Bryce Young, the guy who's going to win the Heisman on the offensive side. That's a step ahead of Michigan right now. And then Georgia-Cincinnati to me was an easy call. I don't think you drop Georgia to four. I don't see how you go undefeated in the SEC regular season and your only loss is the number one team. Cincinnati, on the other hand, four is about right. They could have been up to three if maybe some things happened along the way the last month, but they needed pretty much all the Power Five teams to lose in order to get anywhere higher than four, and it's fine. I think that these two matchups make sense. I think it makes sense that Georgia is the favorite over Michigan. I don't think that Vegas looks at last week as what Georgia is. I think they look at that as it was a bad game, but they're still the favorite over Michigan. And for Cincinnati, you mentioned great secondary. Sauce Gardner is going to be a first-round pick. You have Kobe Bryant, who is a Thorpe finalist. He's the other cornerback. And now John Metchie's out for the season for Alabama.
Yeah,
tore his ACL. So you have Jameson Williams, who's a Biletnikoff finalist and has been a superstar. But now their second-best receiver is Slade Bolden. Their tight ends have to play a bigger factor. Their freshman, of course, which made plays late in the Auburn game, will have to step up. This is not an Alabama team that has four future first-round picks ready to go. Maybe in the future they will, but not as of the next two drafts. So for Alabama against Cincy, I think they're going to be able to run the ball better. But Cincinnati will be able to, in my opinion, do a good job of at least making the passing game somewhat difficult for Alabama. But they have to get pressure. They have to hit Bryce Young in the backfield. Because if not, as good as their corners are, Bama's receivers will get open eventually. And they handicap the Michigan-Georgia game real quick. Michigan does everything well. They make very little mistakes. If Georgia does what they did against Bama and they don't get a pass rush, Michigan very well might pull the upset. But if they find their way to get in the backfield the way they've done all year, I don't think Michigan has the quarterback and the wide receiving core to test the Georgia secondary the way Bama did. Because a lot of people were saying all season, as good as Georgia's defense is, their secondary might be vulnerable against a good quarterback. Unfortunately, they found out in the SEC title game against Bryce Young. I don't think that will be the same way against Cade McNamara in the Orange Bowl. So I like Georgia and Bama to get back to a rematch. But those are two great matchups. I can't wait to watch them. And it is this weird year where, you know, Sunday lines up for NFL Sunday. Saturday is New Year's. So Friday on New Year's Eve, where a lot of people go out and party, there's going to be that Orange Bowl happening Saturday on that Friday night with Michigan, Georgia. And then, you know, I'll give a shout out to that Barstool Arizona Bowl. They have to go up against the playoff this year. So I don't know who will watch that game, let alone, I'm sure Barstool will come up with creative ways to make it fun for their fans. But the fact that you have to stream it and that game goes up against Alabama Cincinnati, good luck. I don't see many diehard fans watching that.
Yeah, no, and you know, good for Central Michigan and Boise for being part of that experiment. But it is going to be interesting. I think it's more about, you know, the week of and the branding of that than the actual eyeballs on the game. And let's be honest, like, you know, it's not like the Camellia Bowl or wherever, you know, another group of five versus group of five bowl is putting them, you know, a ton of eyeballs there anyway. So. But we'll see. Let's talk about the other New Year's Six bowls. And really, you can look at some of these as like, what would this expanded 12 team playoff look like? Obviously, you'd move some stuff around with the way conference champions would line up. But let's talk about it. The other New Year's Six bowls, you have Notre Dame versus Oklahoma State and the Fiesta Bowl. The Rose Bowl is a traditional Rose Bowl. Love to see that. Ohio State versus Utah. I say traditional in this, yet this is Utah's first trip to the Rose Bowl, but it is as a Pac-12 team. Number 7, Baylor versus number 8, Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. And then Michigan State, number 10 versus number 12, Pitt in the Peach Bowl. Let's talk about Notre Dame, Oklahoma. This is the best matchup of, Oklahoma State, the best matchup of the group. And Notre Dame's slight favorite here. They've hired their coach. They're all in on Freeman. Now they got to go out and show why potentially they deserve to be in that playoff.
Yeah, look, and I think fifth was justified for them. Notre Dame, as we said for the last month, needed a lot of help. They probably aren't realistically a playoff team, but somebody was going to get that 4 seed if chaos happened. After Baylor beat Oklahoma State, I was thinking, well, if Georgia takes care of business now, Notre Dame might actually make it. And Then Bama just laid the hammer down. But yeah, this is a big matchup. As I said, Jim Knowles is leaving for Ohio State. I would imagine he still coaches this game. But that does hurt a team a little bit just in preparation because now he's focused on another job. He's not a head coach at that other job, so it's a little different. But that does change the mentality slightly. For Notre Dame, they almost look at this game in many ways as the start of next season, where You now have a month to prepare. You have a new coach in place. Your offensive coordinator's back. And Marcus Freeman, this is his first game as head coach. It counts in the record book. Notre Dame has not won a BCS / New Year's Six game since January 1st of 94, when the 93 season, where they probably should have been the national champion when they beat Florida State. But for Notre Dame, when you look at this team, they have a ton to play for. They have a chip on their shoulder. They had a coach who deserted the program so that he can go to LSU. So they're going to be pretty pumped to play this game. And it's a favorable matchup. It was going to be Oklahoma State or Michigan State. I think Michigan State would have been a more favorable matchup just because of how bad that secondary is. But Oklahoma State, this is going to be a real challenge. It's basically a coin flip game, but I like the Irish chances. And I think overall, it's a good matchup for both programs. And also, this is the first time these programs have ever met. Notre Dame's never played Oklahoma State. So this is a first in many regards. And it should be a great early kickoff, 11 a.m. Arizona time on New Year's Day, 1 o'clock Eastern. So it should be a really good game. And as you said, a lot to play for both programs. Oklahoma State's not in this mix very often. Notre Dame hasn't won in this mix very often.
Yeah, let's jump down to the next game, Ohio State at Utah. And this is one where you kind of worry about how invested is Ohio State. You know, they're a team that has expectations for the playoff every year. Utah, glad to be there, obviously. Their first Rose Bowl. Ohio State, 6.5-point favorites here. They are the better team, but you kind of like that idea of Utah coming out with something to play for.
Yeah, I agree. I think that with bowl games now, and we've seen this in the New Year's Six, maybe not the Rose Bowl as much, but we certainly saw in the Sugar Bowl last year with Florida, we see some teams that care and some teams that don't. If Ohio State doesn't come into this game prepared, or maybe, God forbid, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave say we're sitting out, that changes the whole dynamic of this game. You know that Utah is coming. You know that Cameron Rising, who's a local kid, Newberry Park High School up in Ventura, California, he's going to come and say, I want to win my home game. I've never been in the Rose Bowl. And now for Utah, they've never been in the Rose Bowl in terms of playing this game. They obviously play UCLA there every other year. So this really is a motivation game. If Ohio State comes with full motivation, they're going to win this game. But instead, if they don't, we know what Utah does well. And they're the type of team, you know, I saw Spencer Hall tweet this last week, and he said, no team in college football enjoys kicking ass more than Utah. Like, they're that type of team. If they can smell blood and they smell the fact that you don't want to be physical for 60 minutes, Utah loves that, and they love just running you off the
Wisconsin
field.
Wisconsin, too, I feel like. I was trying to think, like, just off the top of my head, I was thinking Wisconsin or Iowa as, you know, one of those hard-nosed Big 12, Big 10 teams. But that's kind of what Utah feels like, and especially in a Charmin soft Pac-12.
Yeah, that's probably the difference is Wisconsin has three other teams in their own division that try to do that, where yeah, Utah's exactly. The only team in the Pac-12 that wants to do that. So, yeah, it should be a great game. We look at the Sugar Bowl as well, number 7 versus number 8. Our fun as hell, Ole Miss Rebels.
So it's going
to
be awesome.
Matt Corral, I have to think he plays because this is a really good game. You know, he's draft stock-wise, I think he can really use the bump and play one more game. And for Baylor, they over-succeeded all year. They're Big 12 champions. In a 12-team playoff, Baylor actually would have gotten a bye and would have been the 4 seed because sure. The top 4 conference champions get byes according to what's been proposed. For Baylor, you know that they're going to come and play. So I can't wait to watch that matchup where you have Dave Aranda, a defensive-minded coach, against Lane Kiffin, an offensive-minded coach.
Yeah, I mean, these guys' names are in every rumor. Lane Kiffin has parlayed that into an extension. Dave Aranda has as well. Or I believe he has as well, right? Baylor ended up paying him more. Either way, those guys are always, you know, the next guys up. So, you know, this game, though, this is one where both teams want it, too. You know, this is Ole Miss looking for an 11-win season, a top-5 finish, you know, if you can beat Baylor. And then Baylor coming in saying, hey, you know, see you later, Oklahoma. You lost your coach and you're going to the SEC. Texas, you're a garbage fire. We could be the preeminent program in the Big 12 moving forward. And a big win here, maybe that keeps Aranda, maybe that keeps stuff rolling there. So that's this is going to be an exciting one. And you have a fun one, I guess you'll say, to end it, the other New Year's Six Bowls. Number 10, Michigan State, kind of ended the season on a little bit of a slumpish, if you will, versus number 12, Pitt, where you've got a Kenny Pickett, who looked great in that ACC championship game. Your poor Demon Deacons, man. They got all their winning out early because it was ugly towards the end of the season. Pitt's 3-point favorites here.
Yeah, I think it makes sense when you look at Kenny Pickett against this Michigan State secondary. Jordan Addison might go for 200+. Kenny Pickett's going to have a big game. Now, Pitt, as of last night, lost their offensive coordinator, Mark Whipple, who resigned. Rumors are he's going to end up in Nebraska. There were also rumors I heard a couple weeks ago that said he might retire after the year. So it was odd for him to step away before the bowl game. But for Pitt, they passed the ball well. Michigan State can't stop the pass. And also, it's Narduzzi against his old team. He played against Michigan State for the first time. He coached there for years. And for both programs, again, Michigan State on paper was only supposed to win 4 games. Pitt absolutely was not one of the favorites in the ACC heading into the year. I believe they were like 50-1 to win the conference. And now both of these teams are playing a New Year's Six game on primetime, separate from all the rest of the games where there's nothing else happening on December 30th in Atlanta. So it should be a fun game and a huge game for both programs to try to get that 12th win for Pitt and 11th win for the Spartans. So on that side, Kenny Pickett, of course, will transition now. He's a Heisman finalist, so everything that you can see match up has gone really well for him. And if Pickett has a big game, he's maybe the front runner to be the top quarterback taken in the next year's draft. He's really elevated his stock quite a bit. He's in that mix. He'll go in the first. I think him and Corral are very safe to go in the first round. And then you have Sam Howell, maybe Malik Willis, maybe Carson Strong, maybe guys like that are kind of in the mix. But I feel pretty strongly that Pickett will go somewhere in round one. Matt Corral will go somewhere in round one as well.
Yeah, real quickly, and you know, as you know, I'm a Patriots fan. That Monday night game was
take the under, right?
Amazing. 3 passes for total passes for Mac Jones. The Patriots get the win. But the best part was there was a stat before the game that ESPN showed that Mac Jones has more wins than all of the quarterbacks taken ahead of him combined this season. The Patriots are also in the 1 seed right now. Got a big game in a week after their bye against Indy. But that is funny to see. You know, we're talking about next year's quarterbacks already, but this year's quarterback crop has been
Yeah, there's way more questions.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Heisman, though. Bryce Young, -5,000. He's going to win it. You know, it was funny. We were always like, when's he going to have his Heisman moment? You know, they've kind of been up and down all season. Granted, they were winning, but then just came out and was gangbusters in that SEC championship game and locked it up right there.
It did. And look, I understand he's going to win. I don't think he's the best player on his team this year. I would still go Will Anderson as my number one guy. I thought that if you remove him from that LSU game, they don't win. You remove him from the Auburn game, they don't win. Bryce Young is deserving in terms of he's had a great season and he stepped up and beat Georgia. He stepped up in that final possession. I don't want to discredit him. I just personally wouldn't have him there. I think Kenny Pickett deserves to be a finalist. I'm glad he made it. Frankly, I'm a little surprised that Kenneth Walker didn't make it. I thought that Kenneth Walker, with that five touchdown game and 160 or 180 yards against Michigan, like if Aiden Hutchinson's there, I'm not quite sure why Kenneth Walker's not there. CJ Stroud put up great numbers, but I do think in his biggest game, he was hit and miss. So I personally would like, I don't understand. I know it's the Heisman Trust that decides who ends up going based on them tallying the votes. But when you have a 2-hour TV show the way they do, and especially not like last year where it's COVID, where nobody's on site,
It just gets so drawn out.
why not invite more players, have more stories profiled, more families talked about? Plus that goes down where like for the rest of his life, Kenneth Walker can say, I was a Heisman finalist. I think that's
100%.
kind of cool. Instead, some years you have like three, other years you have six. I feel like the more the merrier. Like the 1 year with Malcolm Perry, how great it would have been if after the Army Navy game, he flew to New York and he was just there as a finalist.
Well,
Like,
this year he could have just walked over from MetLife.
exactly. Right. And it's one of those things I wish they would expand. I understand they don't want to embarrass a guy where like he's there and then the
You
final
get two
tally
percent
shows,
of the
yeah,
vote,
he had
right?
like 30 votes. But none of that matters long term. Nobody really remembers. Outside of us who follow this closely, nobody really remembers even who second
The
place was most
tally,
years,
right?
let alone
No.
what the difference is between second and sixth. So I just wish Will Anderson could be there. I wish Kenneth Walker could be there. With that said, congrats, Bryce Young, year one as a starting quarterback, back-to-back years. Alabama is going to win the Heisman with DeVonta Smith last year. They're the program that does it. There's a reason why Nick Saban and his staff can go into any player's house across the country and get them to sign to Alabama. And it's because they produce on the field in college and they become first round picks. And there's no other program that has that type of credibility. And you're seeing it with Bryce Young the year after he was a redshirted backup. Now he's winning the Heisman. So congratulations. He's winning. He's 50. He's minus 5,000. So you'd have to put $5,000 down to win 100. The other favorites, Aiden Hutchinson's 20-1, Pickett's 25-1, Stroud's 30-1. And it's funny, as we were just discussing this might be kind of breaking news. A pit buddy of mine texted me and said, with Whipple out, now there's questions about will Pickett even play in the bowl game? So who knows? Nonetheless, we'll get to that in a couple weeks. But all four of these guys are more than deserving. I guess I'd ask you, who would be your Heisman winner?
Yeah, I mean it's hard to argue against Bryce Young. I thought Pickett like and Pickett kind of I like the Heisman for it's kind of how you market the guy, and we've seen some really creative stuff over the years. And they had for Heisman to Pickett for H2P for Pitt was really cool. They had the buildings all lit up in downtown Pittsburgh, so I like that they're pushing that. He was kind of my guy, but at the same time, like, it's going to be the Alabama guy. One thing that's funny, though, is you talk about how great Saban has been. Alabama had never won a Heisman before he arrived there, and now they're about to win their fourth in 12 years. Like, that's Ohio, or that's Oklahoma style winning and USC style winning of the Heisman. They're having four in 12 years. Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Ohio State, USC all have seven total in the 100 years plus. So it's really, really just
Oh, I
impressive
said this. I
what
was
they did.
talking to a buddy of mine yesterday that I went to school with who covers Miami recruiting, and he's done that for his job for like a decade plus now. And I asked him, because we talked about Cristobal in South Florida and will he be able to sort of keep some of the top kids at home that Alabama's gotten. But then I just said on a side note, just at what point, what number would shock you that Saban gets to? So Saban right now has six titles at Alabama. He's the odds on favorite now to get seven. If I told you Saban finishes his career with 10, would that sound like too many? Does that sound right? If I said 12, how does that sound? Like, I said right now 10 would be the number. That
Ten's high.
anything more than that, I'd be a little surprised. But if he wins this year, I feel like 10's like a 50-50 endeavor at this point. It
Yeah, 10 seems high. You look at places
just
like USC, like LSU, like Miami, that are going for these kind of home run, we have to do something to stop this. And what those places are doing are saying, we're getting the biggest name we can, so we can keep guys at home. So it makes it harder for Saban to get the guy from California,
Miami. I would guess, eight or nine makes more sense, but it wouldn't completely shock me if he somehow got 10 at Alabama and called it a day, just because every year now, when Alabama takes the field against anybody in the playoff, odds are they're the favorite, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. It's not like Nick Saban saying, I'm going to take off the next 3 years in recruiting and kind of do this old school where I build up a program. No, there's no building up at this point. He's the one guy that's been able to sustain a dynasty and just keep it there for longer than anybody ever has.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Okay, let's move on to the only game of the week, but one of our favorites every year, and that's the Army-Navy game. This year at MetLife in New Jersey, 3 p.m. Eastern on CBS. Army 7.5-point favorite, and really they're going for that over of 8.5 wins. So excited to see that for them. Both of our best bets, Army minus 7.5. So we think what they're going to get there. My best bet is Army over 8 wins. Which is what we're hoping for this weekend.
How great is this total, by the way?
On my best bet, you lost with the Alabama UGA under 49.5. Alabama, did 40 of that by themselves, so that didn't help.
And also, Iowa for you gave you almost nothing, but without that field goal, you don't get the cover.
Yeah, so, which is funny, 42-3, and I had a 43.5 over and still needed Iowa's field goal to get it.
How crazy is this Army-Navy over-under, though? 33.5. Then the last few years...
Which is crazy because Army scores. We know Army can score.
And we know Navy doesn't stop anybody. So
right.
This might be the year, and that's why I'm just taking Army. I just look at both these teams this year, and, I've watched quite a bit of Army and a little bit of Navy. I just don't – unless Army really struggles or they just fumble the ball 4 times or turn it over 5 times, I don't know why they wouldn't win this game by double figures. So
I think they put up 33 themselves, right? Like, this is a team that's going to want to keep scoring. Why wouldn't they? This is against their main rival, and they've already won the Commander's Cup or Commander's Trophy by virtue that even if they lose, everyone will be 1-1-1, and they'll have the best record. But they want to win that thing on the field and keep that at home by beating both teams. So I see them coming out and putting up 33. Well, I wonder what that team total's got to be. I mean, that means it's got to be what, 20. 21,
yeah, so right now, like so right now, if you look at that game in terms of the projected score for the game, I'm bringing it up right now, it would be the implied score would be 21-13.5 or 21-14 would be where it's at, so to speak. Because the over-under, I guess it went up a point today, so it's now at 34.5. But overall, yeah, it's expected to be a low-scoring game, but I'm with you. I think Army probably gets 24 or 27 or 30 on their own, and then you just need Navy to kind of slightly get something. But I'm going to stay out of the upsets this week. I got my upset last week with Louisiana at home. They sent Napier out the right way. They beat App State again for the second time at home. So I finished up $610 on the season. We'll pick a couple upsets in the bowl season. And for you, you went big. You said you're going big with Houston.
Didn't work out.
You had a good first
half.
Little
did I know it was Bama that I needed to go big on. That probably would have made more sense.
Yeah, exactly right. Or Baylor.
Right. All right, well, let's close out with every game in 60 seconds. We were 8-3 last week. Not bad, actually, for a championship week. 645, 178 on the year. Kent, I'll do it all. My Black Knights of the Hudson. We need one more win for the over. Let's go, Army. Beat Navy.